Earlier today, lawyers in the trial of 9/11 co-conspirator Zacharias Moussaoui presented their closing arguments. The judge gave the jury their instructions, and the jurors then retired to deliberate. They must decide whether to sentence Moussaoui to death or to life in prison. If you have questions about the case, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. Washington Post reporter Jerry Marcon was in the courtroom today. He's been following the Moussaoui case. He joins us now from the courthouse in Alexandria, Virginia. Jerry, nice to have you back in the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What did the jury hear today from the prosecution first?
The jury heard a lot of the same sorts of emotion, I would say, that animated the trial all along. Prosecutors played some of the videos that they played during the second part of the sentencing trial, showing the bodies of people jumping off the World Trade Center, and they flashed pictures of all the victims who'd family members of the dead who testified in the court and sobbed from the stand as they issued sort of a clarion call, for lack of a better term, to the jurors to do what they consider justice for 9/11. They were very clear to say that they do not consider this vengeance. They called it, at one point, one prosecutor called it righteous justice, and they had some very harsh words for Mr. Moussaoui, obviously, which we can get into, but they basically said that there's no other possible sentence other than death. At one point, one of the prosecutors said, I believe the words were, there is no place on this good earth for Zacharias Moussaoui.
And at one point, Leonie Brinkema, the judge in the case, commended both sides, but especially the defense, for the burden of having to represent somebody who rejected them at every turn. Quote, there has never been a defendant as difficult as this one, she said, who did everything he could to undermine your efforts. Did the defendant do anything to undermine his lawyers today?
I wasn't actually in court when he said that, but that is my understanding. Moussaoui today was sort of his usual, cornucopia of emotions. I mean, at various points, and maybe in subtle ways he did, but really nothing more than when he went on the stand. When the prosecutors were showing, as I said, the film of the, the bodies jumping, he was smiling. At other points when they talked, at another point, one of the prosecutors turned to him and, sort of whirled around and, like prosecutors tend to do, this man, Zacharias Moussaoui, loved every minute, he said, of the suffering that, you saw in this courtroom. And at that moment, I looked over at Moussaoui, and he was smiling rather broadly, I have to say. It's all a matter of context. I mean, these jurors have already seen, as your listeners probably know, Mr. Moussaoui take the stand twice, and both times, not only voice no regret for his role in the attacks, but say he would do it again, and do it again tomorrow, and do it again today, and talk about how he wanted to kill every American, presumably including the jury. So I think the question of the damage Mr. Moussaoui is trying to do to his defense is sort of a relative concept.
And the defense, did they continue their argument that questioning his mental capacity?
Yeah, they did. I mean, I wouldn't say that was the focus of their closing. I mean, they certainly, talked about it, but they sort of issued their own challenge to the jury. I mean, the defense basically said, they admitted flat out that the guy's despicable. I mean, they use the words. I mean, it's, I think they even use the term, his comments during his testimony were callous and remorseless, and, it's easy. I think it's one of the lawyers said it's easy to despise Mr. Moussaoui. And they basically said to the jury, the easy answer here would be death, which I think there's a certain logic to that. And they said that the more challenging thing to do would be to give him life. I mean, it's simplistic to just, it's sort of vengeance seeking, they said and implied at various times to kill him, and that, you should have the courage, they actually use that term, to sentence him to life in prison. And yes, they did talk about his mental state, but, it wasn't really so much the focus. I will say this, the prosecutors may have spent more time on mental state today than the defense in seeking to knock down the argument that he is mentally ill.
We're talking with Jerry Marcon, the federal court reporter for The Washington Post, about the sentencing trial of Zacharias Moussaoui. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get a caller on the line. This is Ishmael. Ishmael calling us from Cameron Park in California.
Neil, how are you doing?
Okay.
Listen, guys, I had a quick question. I'm kind of curious. It seems, particularly when Moussaoui took the stand, a lot of the things that he was saying, particularly offensive comments, I guess, to the family members of the 911 victims, I'm curious if there's anything, some sort of leverage that Moussaoui might have, something that, you know, the majority of the public does not know, something that he's able to, I guess, make his own defense in such a very, very wild fence. Again, almost as if he has some sort of leverage, some card to play that is just not being spoken about, particularly with respect to his comments about having this dream of the president, you know, releasing him before the term is over. I guess I'll take my comments off the air.
Okay, Ishmael, thanks for the call.
Should I take a shot at that?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I appreciate the caller and the question, but I'm really not sure what that would be. I got the sense, as everybody who I think, you know, most people who were in the courtroom did, was that Mr. Moussaoui said these things about the family members. I think what the caller was referring to is he called them disgusting, the family members who had, you know, sobbed in court, and he said that they were parading their grief, you know, before the public, you know, unnecessarily. It seemed like he really believed it. I mean, it seemed like he really believed everything that he said, because there was, you know, he had plenty of other opportunities to elaborate. I mean, it just as a follow-up to the same thing, I mean, at one point, you know, the prosecutor was cross-examining him, and he said, you know, you remember the guy who we talked about, a guy who had talked about escaping, testified about, you know, escaping his burning office at the Pentagon, you know, crawling on his hands and knees while his colleagues were dying around him and got out. A guy who testified, and what'd you think of him? And Moussaoui says, you know, my only regret was that he didn't die. I mean, so all of his comments sort of built upon each other. I don't really know what he would know that others don't. I mean, he clearly was not a high-level member of Al-Qaeda. It doesn't seem like his knowledge really extended beyond what his own mission may have been. And he's been in jail for the last 5 years, so I'm not really sure what else that would be.
Yeah, and the government, in its case, had to stipulate that they did not believe Moussaoui when he said that he and the shoe bomber, Richard Reid, were supposed to fly another plane in the attack that day.
Well, I mean, they stipulated, which means it's presented to the jury's fact, that there was no evidence that was true. But they, you know, when the prosecutors were cross-examining Mr. Moussaoui, I mean, I think they tried to insulate themselves from that, the defense taking that argument, because they basically got Moussaoui to say that, yes, Richard Reid was to be part of his crew, but no, Richard Reid did not know about that. In other words, Moussaoui said, you know, yeah, they told me to do it, but they told me not to tell him.
Were there any instructions from the judge today that are unusual in any way?
To be honest, I was not in court for that. My colleague at the Post-Team Dwyer was, but no, I didn't hear of any that were particularly unusual. In fact, the most compelling part of the instructions, from my understanding, was what you already referred to, is when the jury left and the judge, as you said, praised both sides, especially the defense lawyers, for the job they did. And my understanding also is that Mr. Moussaoui was clapping as he left the courtroom after that. So right after Judge Brinkema called him the most difficult defendant she'd ever seen.
And I don't think anybody's going to argue with her about that.
Probably not.
As far as procedure goes from here, this is handled just the way any other case is handled. The jury will come back with a verdict?
Yeah, the only difference is really in terms of how it handles with the media, because there's such a huge media contingent here. And this is very unusual. There will be a one-hour notice when the jury has reached a verdict, and I will go out over the court's website and email to every journalist who subscribes, myself and probably hundreds of others, and everybody who wants to hear the verdict will descend upon the courthouse. And as happened in the first phase of the trial, the court spokesperson will be reading the verdict from a microphone in front of the courthouse at the same time it's being read in the courthouse, in the courtroom, which is quite unusual. But other than that, it's the same as any trial. The jury has questions. They notify the judge in writing, and the judge calls them in, and they answer the question. And other than that, we go until there's a verdict.
Jerry Markin, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Jerry Markin is the federal court reporter for The Washington Post and joined us today from the courthouse in Alexandria, Virginia, where a jury is now deliberating on the death penalty for Zacharias Moussaoui. More later today on All Things Considered. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan.